On this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Think back to what you liked to do when you were a kid. Think back to what makes time go by super fast right now. What puts you in the zone? Crazy things like that. You know what was the number one thing that caused my blood sugar to stay regular during the whole day? Like until like 6 p.m. Like I would go down to 50 something and having a balanced body, which I was just hardcore the balanced body, right, for years and years. But I wasn't paying attention to the two other things, which should be what?
Health, performance, nutrition, longevity, ancestral living, biohacking, and much more. My name is Ben Greenfield. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. You are about to hear a keynote talk that I gave at an event called Biohack the World in New York City. It was a ton of fun. We had a fantastic number of questions after the presentation. I'm giving you both the presentation and the questions and a link to the resources page for the presentation, a downloadable PowerPoint PDF of the presentation, and everything that I mentioned in today's podcast. I'm going to put links for you if you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/assemblage, because the place I spoke at was called The Assemblage. Really cool place in New York City. bengreenfieldfitness.com/assemblage. A-S-S-E-M-B-L-A-G-E. bengreenfieldfitness.com/assemblage. Enjoy the show, and remember, all your show notes are at bengreenfieldfitness.com/assemblage.
I thought tonight, we have the book here, but I wanted to talk about some of the things that I thought were really, really especially interesting in the book that we could generate some cool discussion around, and walk you guys through some cool key concepts. I love to teach. Like that, I wake up every morning. I get to learn cool shit and tell people about it. And that's just like that tickles my pink every day when I wake up. If I can do that, and I think everybody should have a purpose in life, and that purpose in life should include loving other people with your purpose. Like figuring out how you can take whatever it is that you might happen to, for some random reason, be naturally skilled at, and figure out a way to help other people with it. And that's just what I love to do. So any way that I can help you guys, I'm super happy. And tonight's casual, have a great time, get completely toe up on chaga or whatever crap they have over there. It doesn't have alcohol in it. We'll all go to the Irish bar downstairs afterwards. Yeah, we'll have a lot of ribeye and some whiskey. Anyways, though, for now, they'll have crackers and mushrooms. Anyways, though, so I should get going because I have a lot of stuff I want to tell y'all, and then we'll have a Q&A afterwards. So I won't take, sometimes I take questions while I'm talking. We'll save them for after. So just, you know, if you have a question, just save it for later. That way 18 billion hands don't go up when I talk about shoving laser lights up your nose or something. As was already alluded to, I've always been into physical culture. Which one do you think is me on this photo? The middle?
The right.
The right of the photography. Yeah, I'm this guy. And it's kind of funny because when I got married, I was a bodybuilder, and my wife used to just lay in bed watching me pose in front of a mirror for like 20 minutes every night to all my muscles, because you had to do your show, and so I'd be doing this one, just, you know, whole body cramp, and you can see it started at an early age, and I went to this is the beautiful University of Idaho campus where I studied the physiology and the biomechanics and just love this stuff. I've always, people ask, how'd you get into this, and I'll have some sexy wounded healer story. I've just always loved this stuff. Always been to the physical culture and the outdoors, and, you know, eventually after I met my wife, who's a farmer and rancher and was like, you know, slaughtering pigs in our garage, I started to get into, you know, nutrition and how to make your own food and, you know, hunting and fishing and all these things that bring us in closer connection to the sustenance that we're fueling ourselves with. But, you know, early on it was a lot of exercise stuff, a lot of fitness stuff. And I did bodybuilding. You can see almost every other shot, I promise. I'll just put photos up of me with my shirt off. But bodybuilding was like the original biohacking. I don't know if you'll know this, but like, if you go into the old bodybuilding forums, I mean, everybody was doing all this stuff way back in the day. It's like there's a few sectors, bodybuilding and European soccer and, you know, Silicon Valley execs, and there's a small subset of people who were early adopters of biohacking. And now it's cool because in the information age, we're getting, you know, trickle down biohacking information. And when I say biohacking, it can be a silly term sometimes because the original biohackers were, you know, they were grinders. They treat their bodies as wetware, and they put hardware and chips and compasses and electrodes in the ears and all sorts of stuff to enhance the body. And now, you know, we make ourselves a high fat smoothie with 8 tablespoons of coconut oil and call it biohacking. I call it cooking diarrhea. But ultimately, you know, we've got access to a lot of cool information now, which I think is great. But originally, you know, I was delving into this stuff in the deep underground dark world of bodybuilding, and then I got into the next most unhealthy sport on the planet, and then Ironman triathlon for like 10 years. And, you know, and the whole time, like, I swallowed the line and sinker. I thought I was fit, and I felt good in spandex, and I could ride my bike really fast. But I did Spartan racing too. You know, also very masochistic, arguably maybe more functionally fit than Ironman triathlon. But, you know, I really got into all these, you know, ways to beat up the body and make it your slave and buffet your body and get super fit. But, you know, I got into, it was right before I wrote Beyond Training, I got into this whole realm of self-quantification, you know, blood biomarkers. I started looking at stuff, you know, rampantly high cortisol and like hypogonadal testosterone and extremely low thyroid and rampant inflammation. And that's when I really started to delve more into what I would consider to be kind of the holistic side of things, right? Like, how do we care for our bodies? How do we engage in practices that are more conducive to overall wellness, health, longevity? And really with Boundless, the big focus is energy. Like, how can you have all the energy that you want to beck and call? How can you finish a workout and not be drained, laying on the ground, sucking wind, but how can you actually feel good and energized throughout the day and sleep well and have good digestion? You know, and so Beyond Training was more for, like, you know, kind of like athletes and exercise enthusiasts to fight against some of these battles that I discovered in myself. And then with Boundless, because I get this question, so fair to answer for you guys, that's more, it's about living a long time, feeling good doing it. And it's even got, you know, things about spirituality, relationships, and gratitude, and all these things that, I mean, I gotta say this, that, you know, we are all on this adventure of self-improvement, and we're doing a lot of really cool things to get that. But I see this over and over again, you know, I'm talking to clients on the phone or at conferences or talks like this. In the end, everything we're doing is still an empty pursuit, right? Unless we have friends, unless we have good relationships, unless we're caring for the most important part of us, you know, this spark. There's one part of us that will go on to live forever. The spark, the soul, the spirit. And so caring for that and understanding that, you know, the old grandmas in Sardinia, Italy, who smoke cigarettes and drink gin every day, they're still living a really long time because they've tapped into the spiritual happiness and social life and relationships. But ultimately, I wanted Boundless to really be more about energy, about just having all the energy you want, whether or not you want to go and do whatever, CrossFit or Ironman or Spartan or anything like that. And kind of the way that I come at things, the angle I come at things from, is let's figure out how we can still stay true to our ancestry, right? How can we have one foot in the realm of ancestral wisdom and the other foot in the realm of modern science, meaning, like, if the sun is shining outside and you have a phone call to take, don't stand in front of your stupid $8,000 infrared light panel with your pants pulled down while you're talking on the phone. Go outside in the sunshine, you know, wear some grounding shoes or go out there barefoot. You know, if you have a fancy cryotherapy membership, but your shower is as effing cold as it is here in New York City, like it is the condo I'm staying at, just take a shower in cold water or go, you know, go to the beach and go for a walk or go jump in the ocean. Or, you know, if you have the option to eat a good, healthy, whole food meal versus taking, you know, the superfood smoothie that's processed and that's been shipped to you in a jar that costs you $80, so you gotta have it, you gotta put in your smoothie. But if you have a little backyard patio with rosemary and thyme, and you can get yourself some good grass-fed liver, mushrooms, or something, like, that's kind of my angle, is I embrace the modern science, but especially in this biohacking world, like, we have to maintain our roots to our ancestry as well, because a lot of this stuff, even the biohacks, like, there can be evolutionary mismatches, right? We can have Wi-Fi devices on our wrists and Bluetooth meditation apps, you know, blazing through our skulls and all these crazy things that we're doing that aren't necessarily healthy. So I always look at things through the lens of, is this an evolutionary mismatch, right? Are we marrying ancestral wisdom to modern science? Are we just grabbing every last cool thing that comes up and then buying it and trying it and not thinking about our biology and the way that we humans have been hardwired for thousands and thousands of years to live? Because all this stuff is pretty new for ourselves, for our body. I don't want to feed false information. All of us get tired. I was tired this afternoon. I collapsed on my bed after walking 17,000 steps around New York City in a meeting here and a podcast there and another meeting. And, I just collapsed. But, I take out my new calm and my binaural beats and my lavender, and I use this whole scientific realm to really push the reboot button on my body very quickly. So it's not about never running out of energy. It's also about being able to just push the reboot button when you want to push the reboot button. So don't get me wrong, humans get tired. We're supposed to get tired, right? So this isn't about feeling like you're on modafinil all day, but it is about knowing how to tap into energy, how to reset energy, how to restore and how to refill energy whenever you want. And that's what balance is about. So balanced body, right? We want metabolic efficiency. I talk about in the book how to put together workout programs so you get endurance, mobility, strength, power, stamina, clean gut, good immunity, high nutrient status. Like these are all the elements that will go into having a balanced body, which I was just hardcore the balanced body, right, for years and years, but I wasn't paying attention to the two other things, which should be what?
Breath, spirit.
It was the body. We got you guys know the Keon logo, you know what that is, the three swoops? It's body, mind, and spirit. Body, mind, and spirit, right? So there's the mind, right? Like, are you learning new things? Do you have balanced neurotransmitters? Are you fixing a leaky blood-brain barrier? Do you have good sleep? Do you have good memory, good cognition, good executive working function, right? So that's another area that we want to target. It's like the second cog in the wheel of balanced energy. And then the third, of course, as I already alluded to, is the most important. Right? Are we caring for our spirits? Are we caring for our souls? Do we have a meditation practice, a gratitude practice, relationships, service in the local community, silence, solitude, study? I mean, having a trained spirit is not just about going on your 38th ayahuasca retreat to Costa Rica or whatever loft your shaman's coming over to. There's a lot more that goes into having a boundless spirit. And man, when you put that icing on the cake, because I kind of did all three in order, right? Like, I worked my body, and I was like, oh, I got to start taking care of my bloodstream and my mind, my blood-brain barrier, my neurotransmitters, and I was still empty. And really, I didn't feel full fulfillment and happiness in my life until probably 2 years ago. Like, it was about 2 years ago that I really was like, oh, I'm actually happy now. I'm actually happy because I'm not at the gym at 7 p.m. at night. I'm laughing with my kids at the kitchen table, playing tabletop like during an hour and a half long family dinner. And in the morning, I'm not stressed because I'm running downstairs to check email so I can make it to my morning workout or my sauna in time. I'm actually on the floor, cross-legged, in my office or in my living room, praying, meditating, writing down in my gratitude journal. And that's the part that I think is the most neglected and the most important. But you got to have body, mind, and spirit. And if you guys like anything I'm going to tell you in the next 21 slides, where I'm going to talk about some of the cool things you can do to optimize body, mind, and spirit, and you tweet it out or Instagram or whatever, the hashtag we're going to use tonight, and like if you're reading the book and you see some cool thing you want to talk about, it's going to be hashtag be boundless. I want it to take over the world. And this book is going amazing, you guys. I feel so blessed and so grateful. We've like quintupled what the publisher thought we were going to do for pre-orders. Every single New York publishing house turned me down because they said this book is dead in the water. Nobody's going to want a 650-page, $65 tome on the human blueprint. And we're proving them wrong. There are tons of really good books out there. My editor told me he did feel bad about one thing in the book. He said, you realize after reading this book, people are going to need to buy like 100 other books because I talk about it. I read a book every day. And so I'm always like, and between that and the people I'm interviewing on my podcast, it's like I have all this information I'm putting out. And so I weave a lot of that in the book. And so if you visit the webpage for any of the book chapters, there's a website with just all the information that got cut and edited out because I had to kiss 450 pages goodbye, but they all kind of live on the book website. And there's more books that kind of delve more deeply into each of the different topics. There's different podcasts, there's different articles. So it turns into this huge wild adventure. But I apologize because you're going to need to ask your family for Amazon gift cards for your birthday, for Christmas, because there's going to be so many books you're going to want to read after you read Boundless. So anyways, aside from that though, it turned out really well. So anything you guys can do to spread the word, be amazing because I want this thing to just get into a lot of people's hands. So a few things that I talk about in the book. Number one is your neurotransmitters. And these are the chemical messengers that travel throughout your body. There's a lot of ways that you can take care of them. As you can see here on the slide, avoiding toxins and replacing building blocks, moving the nerves, cleaning the brain, quantifying your neurotransmitters. But just a few little things. First of all, stimulation. You don't want to overstimulate specifically or overexpress your adenosine receptors, these receptors that interact with caffeine, and that you need more and more adenosine to be able to interact with those receptors to get to sleep at night. So even if you're having a cup of coffee and not having it afternoon, your adenosine receptors are still becoming saturated. So a trick for that is you just, for every 1 to 2 months, you switch to decaf. You switch to something like a decaf coffee or a cacao tea or a green tea, and it really helps to re-stabilize those neurotransmitters that are constantly stimulating. So anyone here drinks coffee, I drink it all the time, but when I run out of I get like a shipment of 3 bags from Keon on a month, and I usually run out of those by like week 3, and then I call my mom as a coffee shop, and she sends me a decaf coffee, and then I drink the decaf coffee for a week, do a reset, and go back into the regular coffee. But that's one example, just thinking about neurotransmitters. Another example would be helping to repair some of the neurons in the brain that can get damaged from all the inflammation, from the toxin load we're exposed to, from non-native EMF. There's a lot of compounds that you can use to repair the brain. One that I talk about in the book that's particularly effective you all hear about glutathione, right? Which is wonderful for detoxification for the brain. But man, when I was doing the research for the book, N-acetylcysteine, that is amazing. If you actually do have some brain issues, you've been exposed to inflammation and flying a lot, like having that in your back pocket, that's something I talk about in the book. And I think it's as good or better than glutathione for some of the brain function stuff. And then finally, if I could talk about one other thing for the building blocks, the neurotransmitters need specific building blocks, as do the myelin sheaths, that help to transmit that information. So I can tell you 4 things, 2 for the myelin sheaths and 2 for the neurotransmitters. So the 2 for the neurotransmitters are vitamin B complex and amino acids, a properly structured protein-rich diet or the use of amino acids. And then for the other component, a vitamin B complex, like we were talking about thorn earlier, like the thorn multi or any other vitamin B-rich complex is really good for neurotransmitter precursors. Then for the myelin sheaths, you already learned about DHA, right? DHA is fantastic for that. But what's the other one? What's the other one that the myelin sheaths are comprised of, a really important one? Anybody know? And maybe we'll give the books to the right answer. Oleic acid. Oleic acid, like from the omega-3 rich Mediterranean diet with olive oil and olives, extra virgin olive oil. Like that's wonderful for the myelin sheath. So if you have a combination of DHA and these oleic acids, it's wonderful for those sheaths. So those are a few things to think about when it comes to neurotransmitters. But the other thing you need to do for your brain is address the blood-brain barrier, because we hear about the gut-blood barrier a lot, but not about the brain-blood barrier, which is just as important, and which can, very similar to the gut-blood barrier, become permeable, especially when you're exposed to things like toxins, EMF, etc. So there are certain things that you can do to repair the blood-brain barrier. A few of the important ones. One would be a lot of people have a high blood pressure, right? Especially in the biohacking community where all of us are using nicotine now. There seems to be the new stimulant, but that'll increase blood pressure. You just exercise in general that's too hard, where you're constantly sympathetically stimulated and stressed. That can have an impact on blood pressure. Overall stress can have an impact on blood pressure. And most of us know about garlic, about fish oil, about some of these things that would naturally lower blood pressure, magnesium. One of the things that I talk about in the book, if you deal with high blood pressure, there's a device called the Zona. I bought it for my mom because she has high blood pressure. It's a handheld dynamometer that quantifies your grip. They've shown in clinical studies that they will decrease blood pressure with just about 5 minutes of use every day. So that's a really, really good hack for blood pressure. It kind of flies under the radar of the biohacking community. I understand why. I did a podcast with the guy like 6 years ago. It's an amazing device. Another one would be saturated fat. Right? Saturated fat can actually induce blood-brain barrier leakage if it is in the presence of low plant intake or low fiber intake, right? So that's one of the things that kind of sort of concerns me about a high saturated fat carnivore-based diet. Is one of the things that's not talked about a lot is the blood-brain barrier and the effect that may be induced by high amounts of saturated fat in the absence of some of these fibers, polyphenols, et cetera, that we need to help combat some of the inflammation that can occur in the gut and also in the brain in response to a high saturated fat diet. So if you're on the saturated fat, coconut oil, butter type of thing, make sure you're also including plants or other fiber sources in your diet. So it's very important for the blood-brain barrier. We talk a lot about the vagus nerve and biohacking, chanting, singing, gargling, humming, cold water face dumps, all these things that we can do to tone the vagus nerve. And I'm definitely not even opposed to the use of these vagal nerve stimulators. And I use them. I have a Fisher Wallace Circadia and a NuCalm device. And these are amazing for toning the vagus nerve and actually allowing yourself to shift from the parasympathetic very readily. But paying attention to vagal nerve tone is also extremely important. And then the last one is that, there's a lot of stuff in there, but coffee and tea have actually been shown to be very good for the blood-brain barrier, but there's a law of diminishing returns. It could be related to blood pressure, could be related to vagus nerve activation, but small amounts of coffee and tea, you know, doing like 1 to 2 cups a day, it's fantastic for the blood-brain barrier. And then once you get more than that, it starts to damage the blood-brain barrier. So it's important, again, similar to neurotransmitter, be cognizant of the stimulants that are coming into the system. So those are just a few of the little ones to pay attention to for fixing the leaks. Now, number three is breath work. How many of you in here have a breath work habit? I was going to lead you guys through breath work, but they already did it, which is fantastic. I'm so happy because breath work is just a huge free way to lower stress and also to just change your life. You know, probably the three biggest ones that I do every day is I breathe myself to sleep every night. So I track the sleep latency with an Aura, and I do 4-8 breathing. I started doing it after I interviewed Andrew Weil on my podcast, who does 4-7-8 breathing, but I didn't like the 7-count hold. It kind of kept me up. So I just did 4 in, 8 out, 4 in, 8 out. And my latency, which was pretty good already, I was like 7-8 minutes taking me to fall asleep. Now it's like 3 minutes, and I'm out like a light. It was 4-8 breathing. When I'm in the office, typically I'll use the alternate nostril breathing. The alternate nostril in through the left nostril, cover the left nostril, out through the right nostril. And then the other one that I also use, especially like when I'm on planes, when I'm just like, I use this a lot when I'm walking through busy sections of town or through an airport, I do the box breathing, right? I'll even do like 4-count step, 4-count hold, 4-count exhale, 4-count hold, and I'll walk like that. And it almost feels like moving meditation. And then the final form of breath work that I use quite a bit, meaning about twice a month, is I have a holotropic breath work routine. If you go to YouTube, you can download even just like 15-minute holotropic chunks that just take you to a whole different planet in terms of supposedly DMT production, although that hasn't actually been quantified, but supposedly causes DMT production, very similar to what you get from something like LSD, but it's kind of a free way to tap into almost like what plant medicine would give you, but with far less serotonin exhaustion, right? That's one of the problems with plant medicines and psychedelics is they really exhaust your serotonin receptors. There are things you can do, you know, if you're using plant medicines and psychedelics, like replenish 5-HTP, take a good absorbable vitamin C, take a methyl donor like SAMe, like these are all things, because I'll use plant medicines on about a quarterly basis, but I always kind of replenish going in and replenish going out to make sure that I fill my body with what it needs to get my serotonin levels back up. But when you're doing holotropic breath work, you can get a lot of these same benefits without actually doing the same number on your serotonin receptors. So those are a few of the breathwork routines that I use. There's also a guy I interviewed, the Renegade Pharmacist, that Niraj Najik. He has a 21-day Soma breathwork course. I'm taking my kids through it right now. And in week 3 of that course, he has like a 60-minute choreographed holotropic breathwork routine. And I keep that on my MP3 player. And that's the one I listen to when I'm laying flat on my back in the sauna when I'm doing a holotropic routine, again, about twice a month. It's just amazing. You feel wonderful for days afterwards. I also tried it the other day anybody ever used hyperbaric oxygen therapy? Like a hyperbaric oxygen chamber? I got one of those soft shells about 3 months ago. Oh man, it's a game changer. You recover so much more quickly. You saturate your tissues with oxygen. And now I go in that and I do breath work. What I do is I started taking my naps in there and I wake up and I'll play like a 10-minute breath work routine. And oh man, you do breath work in that thing and you're just full of oxygen. It's amazing. So if you haven't tried hyperbaric, it's really cool. So smart drugs and nootropics, those are obviously very interesting for, I know, a crowd like this that came to a biohacking event. There's lots of stuff out there, lots of blends out there. There's a few that I really like. I'm not big into Deprenil or Modafinil or Adderall just because of the problems those can create, again, with neurotransmitters, dopamine, serotonin. When I say to avoid stimulants, to take care of your neurotransmitters, I have Modafinil. I have a little Ziploc baggie of it. It lasts me about a year. And I'll use that like if I, like, you know, I'm flying with this cat to India, you know, next month, and there'll probably be like one day where I'm just exhausted. I got to take a Modafinil, you know, maybe the first day or whatever to get over the jet lag or the sleepiness, but I'll pull it out in very, very few circumstances. But the other ones that I use, L-theanine, if I do have a cup of coffee in the afternoon, kind of helps to stabilize the release of the caffeine. If you're a slow coffee oxidizer, if you test your genetics, you're a slow coffee oxidizer, L-theanine, you should have that in your pantry if you're going to have caffeine. It'll just make you feel so much better on caffeine. I do use nicotine. I'll chew nicotine gum sometimes, although I've kind of increasingly switched. People are always like, how gum you chewing in your Instagram videos? You're a chomping gum, bro. I switched to this peppermint oil gum. It's amazing. It's like frankincense and peppermint. I get it from Young Living Essential Oils. It's called Sleek. And I like that. And I really like nicotine gum for a while, but I didn't want to be dependent on a stimulant for my gum. So I switched to this essential oil gum. But I still like nicotine every once in a while as a pick-me-up, especially before like an evening dinner or an event like this, because it's transient. It's in and out of your system pretty quickly and doesn't keep you up that much at night afterwards. I actually take my nicotine and I mix it with methylene blue. And because methylene blue is fantastic for your mitochondria, and nicotine has an impact on your mitochondria as well, that's a very cool mix, very cool mix. And I think it was Dr. Ted Achikoso, who I interviewed and talked about the sublingual troches that they're making that have a microdose of nicotine and CBD and some methylene blue in there. But that's a very, very cool little mix for a cognitive pick-me-up. And I'm just sharing with you guys the ones I found to be really good. Microdoses of CBD, the company Alive by Nature now, they're doing an intranasal spread with NAD and CBD. Great pick-me-up. That small dose of CBD, you know, we tend to associate CBD with, you know, sleepiness or decreased anxiety and stress, but it actually gives you a cognitive pick-me-up, especially when it's compounded with that NAD. So that's another really cool mix. There are certain peptides that are now becoming pretty popular that work pretty well for cognition. And if you go to the website for the International Peptide Society and hook up with a good doctor, a couple that I like that you could ask them about, one is Dihexa and one is C-Max. And these peptides, they're just amazing for cognition. Gives you a very similar feeling as though you had taken Modafinil in terms of the wakefulness that it induces, but without kind of the robotic kind of almost like a de-emotionalized type of impact that Modafinil has. So these peptides, Dihexa and C-Max, are also really good. And then, of course, you know, I think everybody knows about psilocybin and lion's mane right now, and that's also kind of a cool little stack for cognition. And I mean, I realize it's a lot of stuff, but that's kind of like what's in my back pocket as far as like the certain things I would rely upon for a little pick-me-up from a nootropic or a smart drug or a microdose or the Fisher-Wallace. Those are cranial electrical stimulation devices, technically. And those are also really, really good for inducing some effect on the vagus nerve. And then, of course, there's apps like NBAC for training, which I like, BrainFM. And then as far as neurofeedback goes, I mean, you know, in the biohacking sector, things like the 40 Years of Zen over in Seattle, that's very popular. Another one is the Peak Brain in LA. I don't use neurofeedback quite as much. I'm waiting for someone to come out with a good user-friendly device, like a helmet one could order to their house where all the electrodes are placed properly, and you can use biofeedback, which is a very simple program you can run on your computer. But right now, the world of neurofeedback, I think, is a little bit behind the times, and you still need to go to a clinic. And I would love to see someone come up with like a good app, a good head-worn device that can administer neurofeedback. That's something that doesn't quite exist yet. But neurofeedback is cool to look into if you want to do things like get faster sleep onset or have a concussion or something like that, you know, retrain your brain. So I have a big section in the book about diet. Like, I didn't want to give you guys a diet. I want to teach you how to look at all your blood, all your biomarkers, all your biochemical individuality, and using all of that, choose the diet that's right for you, right? Because the ketogenic diet that helped your neighbor lose 20 pounds, if you've got familial hypercholesteremia or like an FTO gene that would predispose obesity in response to saturated fats, you have a gallbladder or a liver, bile production or bile storage issue, that diet might just be completely wrong for you. Well, work for somebody else. So biochemical individuality, testing, gut, blood, urine, saliva, food allergy, getting those metrics and then figuring out based on that and your ancestry what diet is right for you. That's the way that you do it. But I can tell you that no matter what diet that you're on, there are prevailing characteristics of all these blue zones, all these areas where people really seem to be living healthy despite them having vast differences in their macronutrient intake and the composition of their diets. Some of those things include eating in a parasympathetically driven state, right? We breathed before we started this talk, and same thing, like at our house, it's a deep breath in through the nose, out through the mouth. Do like 3 to 5 rounds of that before we eat. We'll say a blessing, we'll be grateful for the food. And in addition to eating in a parasympathetically driven state, we also see things like some element of fasting, protein restriction. The Mediterranean diet is very popular, but in the Orthodox Church, which is a more healthy, legitimate adaptation of the Mediterranean diet, there's periods of time during the year where you're not eating meat, and certain days of the week where you're not consuming olive oil. There's certain periods of time where you're restricting protein, refeeding protein. And so this idea of having compressed feeding windows, intermittent fasting, certain periods of time when you're engaged in protein restriction. I had a fantastic conversation about this with the guys at Wild Health a couple of weeks ago that I put on my podcast, where they take their clients through autophagy cycles and anabolic cycles throughout the year. So there's periods of time where they're focusing on longevity and periods of time where they're focusing on muscle building. And if that's too advanced for you, you can just, you know, have certain periods of time during the day where you're focused on anabolism and high blood levels of amino acids and carbohydrate refeedings, and then other times of the day where, you know, 8 p.m. rolls around, you're not eating, you're engaged in cellular autophagy, morning cold thermogenesis, and a, you know, morning sunlight and a walk and some fasting, and this press-pull cycling is something the body responds very, very well to. We also see they're eating clean local food, they're eating with people, they have good relationships. Typically, there's a wide variety of food groups, especially wild plants, herbs, and spices. And so no matter what diet that you're eating, make sure you've got autophagy and anabolism dialed in, you're fasting, you're eating in a parasympathetic state, you're preferably having some meals with people, and it's not just about sucking down the latest superfood shake while you're hunched over your email inbox. So that's really what we see in a lot of these areas that are doing the right thing with diets. Now, next is some rules that you follow based around fuel. You know, some of this stuff is from the fueling section of the book, but you know, a lot of us already know about avoiding rancidity and vegetable oils, heating our food wisely. Paying attention to histamines is pretty important. I'm surprised at the number of people these days who I run into who have histamine sensitivities. It's pretty easy to test genetically for that. You take your 23andMe results or your genetic test results and you upload them to Dr. Ben Lynch's service, Stratagene, and you can look at your histamine pathway, see if you have a histamine sensitivity. I found out that I did, and I started to use a histamine blocking supplement prior to consumption of alcohol, prior to consumption of some fermented foods. And even probiotics are going to cause a histamine release. And so using antihistamines or histamine blockers is actually a pretty good idea if you find yourself struggling with things like brain fog, et cetera, after a meal. Sometimes it's the histamine content, and I'm running into that more and more. Lipopolysaccharides are another big one a lot of people struggle with, and those occur when you eat a high-fat, high-carbohydrate meal. So this is why, for example, when I go to a steakhouse now, I'd love to have a big fatty ribeye, and typically it's got bone marrow or butter along with it. But nowadays, I'm pretty careful with my sides, right? I'll order mushrooms, or I'll be very careful with the bread basket. I quit doing the sweet potato fries when we have steaks at our house because that potent combination of the higher carbs and the high saturated fat that can really result in a lipopolysaccharide release. Even though when you order vegetables at a steakhouse, you guys know they're not really vegetables. Have you seen like the Jim Gaffigan bit where he's like, you order broccoli, I'm like, broccoli, we cooked it in ice cream. And that's kind of what vegetables are like at a steakhouse. So you may not want to order vegetables at a steakhouse, period. But the ultimate idea is just be cognizant of the lipopolysaccharides. And then the smash diet's wonderful. Like our house, you walk into our pantry and like the cupboards are like bowed and curved because we have so many Wild Planet boxes of sardines, anchovies, herring, mackerel, and salmon. Right, those are like staples in my diet. Every day I've got one of those worked in. I'm a huge fan of that smash approach to the diet. Glycemic variability. Does everybody in here know what glycemic variability is? Yeah, the amount to which your blood glucose fluctuates during the day, that and inflammation are the two most important markers to track if you're focused on longevity. You're only going to myopically focus on two things. It's looking at your hsCRP and your cytokines and your fibrinogen and your homocysteine and some of these inflammatory markers. But then the other one is hemoglobin A1C. and glucose and insulin and IGF-1 because it's really important. Glucose is going to cause your neuronal cells to go into free radical formation and can oxidize the arteries. And so paying attention to how many times your blood glucose fluctuates. If you can find it in your budget or you can convince your doc to prescribe you something like a Dexcom G6, continuous blood glucose monitor, I wore one for a year and I got so much valuable insight out of that thing. You know, foods I didn't expect that would spike my blood sugar, like green beans, crazy things like that. You know what was the number one thing that caused my blood sugar to stay regular during the whole day? Like until like 6 p.m. Like I would go down to 50 something. Doing cold in the morning. Yeah, even like 5 minutes of cold. Doesn't have to be like a 20-minute cold bath, but cold in the morning is the best thing for the blood sugar. Blew my mind. Like there were some days where like I could have carbs at lunch and it would go up. And it's the cold. It's the cold. So that was the number one thing I found that would control blood sugar. It was crazy. So number nine is to clean your gut. Of course, I have my coffee enema bucket over there. Gotta clean your gut. But usually, when I have a client come to me and they've got gut issues, I'm not a doctor, and don't misconstrue this as medical advice. Normally, I'm talking to people about their gut and health and stuff like that. It's always respectable. Here's what I would do if I were in your shoes. You know, this is what I know, but I'm not prescribing medical advice. But I usually recommend two things: a 3-day stool panel, because things like parasites, this is nasty to think about, but they hatch over cycles. So if you're just doing a stool test over one day, you're not gonna catch it. You gotta do like a 3-day stool panel, which is wonderful. When you go to the fridge, you got FedEx bag number one in the fridge, the stool from day number one, FedEx bag number two. And my wife just loves that. And then the other one is a food allergy panel. It isn't gonna give you a laundry list of false positives. I like the Cyrex food allergy panel for that. So typically, if there's gut issues that are found, I really like the trifecta. It's more than a trifecta, really. It was colostrum, L-glutamine, bone broth, and then the supplement that Dr. Zach Bush makes, the lignite, for healing the blood from the ravages of glyphosate. Like, those are all things that you'll find at the Greenfield House for taking care of the gut. Just, you know, we're foodies, we travel, it's hard to escape glyphosate these days, but we're always paying attention to our gut. These are some of the main things that we use. I detox, but I don't go on these huge hefty detoxes anymore. Like at the beginning of the year, I detox every day. So I do shaking when I wake up or trampolining. I have a vibration platform once a week. I do the coffee enema, infrared sauna anywhere from 3 to 5 times a week. I'm always thinking about how I can kind of, as stuff is coming in while I'm traveling on jets and getting exposed to jet fuel and airports and toxins and walking through the perfume section of Macy's, I'm just constantly thinking, okay, did I today do something to kind of clean out my body, keep stuff moving along? So think about that. Don't just be like, yeah, January is my detox month, right? So you want to pay attention to daily microdoses of detox. That should be right. That's my next book, the Detoxification Microdose book. Write that down, fellas. And then another big one, again, it comes over and over again, to activate the parasympathetic nervous system before you consume food. It's so important, especially if some of the food issues are onset by stress. And then at the bottom there, I have deactivate. And this comes down to a very controversial topic right now, the whole paleo carnivore sector. You know, paleo, don't eat grains, don't eat dairy, built-in plant defense mechanisms and inflammatory molecules, carnivore diet, avoid these hormetic compounds and plants. But, you know, I'm omnivorous, but we always pay attention to ancestral food prep methods. I would not go down to Hawaii and bow hunt a pig and like cut it open there in the field and like pull the pork belly out and start gnawing on it. Right? That's not the way I would prepare it properly, clean it, wash it, cook it. I know it's a horrible, horrible visual. Me bent over a pig in the field. Especially with my eagle pants on. But the other thing is the same thing with plants, right? You gotta soak and rinse and sprout your quinoa, and you need to soak your legumes, and you need to deactivate pre-digested glutens in the sourdough bread with the fermentation process. Old world ancestral preparation methods of plants and grains and legumes. If you learn how to do this, you don't have to be one of those people, like it seems so many folks are now, who are like afraid of plants, afraid of grains, milk, right? Ferment the milk. I'm making kefir now. Pre-digest all the lactose in terms of these wonderful probiotics that produce things like the longevity enhancing compound urolithin A in the gut. It produces collagen peptides in the gut. And so you learn how to take all these foods that are no-nos for people, because they preach this because they don't know or haven't tapped into the time to be able to soak and sprout and ferment and deactivate. But if you have the time to do it or the knowledge, man, it opens you up to a whole wide world of food. Sometimes we get restricted and we get afraid of food, but we don't need to be. We just need to deactivate and treat it properly. I talk a lot about fitness in the book, and one of the things that I talk about is a fascinating study, both on guinea pigs and another one on power lifters, that shows that the longer telomere lengths are associated with the fast, wiry, explosive muscle, not the big muscle. And I'm training for the Russian kettlebell certification right now personally, and I love it because everything's explosive and quick and powerful. And because the kettlebells are kind of heavy, you can still maintain some amount of muscle. But in writing the book, man, I was really surprised at the data showing how crucial, powerful, explosive movements are. And my apologies, because I know CrossFit has been lauded a couple of times, and I think CrossFit's excellent for getting fit. But the only issue I run into, the people who I'm coaching for more longevity, who want to be in it for the long game, is that sometimes doing the fast, powerful, explosive lifting in a metabolically exhausted state can set you up for a little bit of injury potential. So typically, I recommend like lighter weights, body weights, sometimes kettlebells, et cetera, for the explosive stuff, and not to combine the explosive stuff with super duper metabolically demanding work. And then you focus on the strength in a different session. But if there's one thing that when I walk into a gym that I see a lot of people neglecting, it's moving lighter weights more explosively. Like if there's one thing for longevity from the book, it's bigger, it's not better. Moving light weights explosively, like that small, wiry, explosive power lifter, they're gonna live a longer time than the big bulky bodybuilder has to carry and pull all that muscle and have higher antioxidants. And so it's something to think about with the way that you structure training. How big do you want to be? How much muscle do you want to have versus do you want that really functional, small, wiry, explosive muscle? I talk about a lot of other kind of strategies in that be bigger section, but I want to make sure I get everything in for you guys, so I'm gonna keep moving along. For staying strong, probably the number one thing that I talk about in the book that I'm doing more and more of these days, it's really two things. It's super slow training, 1 to 2 times a week. You know, you read a book like Body by Science by Dr. Doug McGuff, and the peripheral blood pressure response, the strength, the bone density, it's just amazing. And it's very easy on the joints, and it's sustainable for life. And it takes like 20 minutes to do one single set to failure. There are even these biohacking machines. I'm gonna do one tomorrow. The ARX Fit machine, you know, that'll guide you through these super slow, exhausting, single set to failure type of movements. And I really, really like, especially for busy people with limited time, that form of training. Then the other one is blood flow restriction training, using KOTSU devices or using these blood flow restriction bands that you can get on Amazon and actually tourniqueting the arms and legs prior to a workout. I use that all the time when I travel and doing bodyweight workouts to maintain muscle. It's amazing. As a matter of fact, I was reading some literature just yesterday. I was talking to somebody in the back room here about it like 20 minutes ago. And if you can trap high levels of blood amino acids in the muscle, they will selectively go to repair the muscles that are being worked where the blood flow is. So now I'm gonna try combining the Keon amino that I'm gonna take right before blood flow restriction training. I think that 1-2 combo is gonna be super effective. I just found this out this week. I'm super excited. I'm a nerd, I know, I'm a total geek, but now, you know, when I read these research studies, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna try this and see what happens. But I think that 1-2 combo, blood flow restriction training and amino acid supplementation, I think is gonna be a game changer. Okay, staying lean. Probably the biggest tip that I give in the book that I do 365 days a year, freaking Christmas morning I do this, is I always wake up in an intermittent fasted state, 12 to 16 hour fast, close to 12 hours for women, close to 16 hours for men is a pretty good rule to shoot for. Next, I get a little bit of caffeine in my system to mobilize fatty acids, cup of black coffee, green tea, nothing in the coffee, no calories. Any calories will take you out of a fasted state. Okay, so no butter, no MCT oil, no C8, nothing. That's great for cognition, but if you just want a full fat burning response, you keep that stuff out. And then the next step is I do 20 to 30 minutes of fasted aerobic cardio, walk in the sunshine, sauna session, anything kind of conversational aerobic, and then I finish with 2 to 5 minutes of cold. I do that every day. I do it with a ton of my clients, and man, it is one of the best ways to just strip fat off the body, get lean super fast. There's been no human clinical studies that I know of that have combined all of those and actually studied them. And so I can't say that research shows that it's the best way to lose fat, but I swear by it. Like, that's my number one tip for staying lean. I do that every single day. Wake up, fasted, caffeine, aerobic, cold, and that's it. And then sometimes on a super busy day when I don't know if I'm gonna have time to like do a hard workout, get on the kettlebells, I'll sometimes have to do a harder workout in that fasted state, but usually it's the easy aerobic stuff.
because then you don't like hypercompensate on egg, omelet, bacon, and avocado, and goat cheese, you know, slapping yourself on the back because you got the hard workout. That's the tricky part about the soul crushing workouts in the morning is you just like, you eat like a pig the rest of the day sometimes. So you gotta be careful for the hard workouts in the morning. I like to work out in the evening, prime the body for carbohydrate intake with dinner, and I like striking then. So the next one is some biohacking tools. Some biohacking tools that I like. I talked about the Katsu bands. One that I've been using quite a bit. This 1-2 combo. If you can hunt it down at like a biohacking facility, or if you have a higher disposable income, you get this 1-2 combo for your home. And I realized some of the stuff I talked about, I was like, man, I'm not gonna spend $70,000 on a 1-2 combo for my home. But that Vasper machine that combines full body exercise with blood flow restriction, that thing's a game changer. Man, oh man. And what I do is I have that LiVO2 next to it, so I can do hyperoxia and hypoxia. So you're getting exercise with oxygen therapy, kind of like a hyperbaric oxygen therapy chamber, while you're doing the full body workout. That's probably my favorite of all like the super techie biohacks. And it's funny because I've got like $250,000 worth of biohacks in my home, all these fancy exercise technologies. 80% of the time, I'm in the garage on the cold cement floor with kettlebells and a sandbag. But when I go into the other gym, I walk through the forest and you open this door and it's like, oh, there's just like all this stuff. Everything known to man for biohacking. My go-to is always the Vasper with the LiVO2. That's the best 1-2 combo. You feel like $1 million afterwards because you get the growth hormone release and you get that oxygenation to the brain. So for those of you who like to really do the cool shit, that's a really cool 1-2 combo. Next is recovery. There's a lot of stuff you can do for recovery. And I'm actually, I'll get on my soapbox briefly here, but I'm a bigger fan of the biohacking world when it comes to recovery versus performance. Like I saw one of my buddies a couple of months ago, and he actually looked remarkably heavier and less fit and less healthy than the previous time that I'd seen him. And we started talking about what fitness routine he was doing. He said, I'm doing the cheat machine. I said, what's the cheat machine? He said, I only need to work out 10 minutes a day. I'm doing some machine, moves me through all the ranges of motion, boom, in, out, done. The problem is, and this is something I run into in the biohacking world, is people don't want to do the work, right? They don't want to actually feel a little bit tired during a workout, maybe put in a little bit more volume, maybe take their 15,000 steps a day instead of 1,000 steps in the morning and have their butt climb in a chair all day because those 1,000 steps in the morning involve them smearing some special cream on their body and standing on a vibration platform. And so I would love for more of the world of performance and athleticism to bleed into biohacking. I actually liked that video they played earlier because these folks were like biohacking, but you could tell they're also working their asses off, right? Like, That's the way it should be done, that all these hacks should use is like the icing on the cake. But the recovery biohacking, that I think is even more valuable because that stuff, that really helps. If you're already putting in the hard work, man, oh man, using some of these tools is really good. I've got a bunch lifted there, but a couple that I like particularly, other than that hyperbaric oxygen chamber that I talked about, if you can get yourself, probably one of my favorite things for recovery, and especially if you get injured or you have some muscles that are super sore after workout, I learned this from a physician who worked with the Tour de France cyclists. And what you do is you get a really good topical anti-inflammatory cream like CBD oil or topical transdermal magnesium or something like that, and you smear it on all the areas that are sore, like the legs or maybe a bum elbow or whatever. And then you get an electrical muscle stimulation device. And it doesn't have to be like the $12,000 high-end one. Like I have a newbie on the other slide. I have one of those things. Amazing for retraining the muscles. And it'll simulate like a 600-pound squat. But I mean, if you just get like a Mark Pro or a Compex or an M-Dot, you put that on top of the cream. And it drives the cream more deeply into the tissue. And then the last thing you do for that 1-2-3 EMS combo is you put ice. You put an ice pack with like frozen peas over top of the electrodes. And that allows you to jack up the electrical muscle stimulation even higher, and you get this rush of blood into the muscles when you take it off. And man, oh man, that's a really good way to get muscles to repair more quickly. I love that. Like if I've like torn up a little knee or screwed up an ankle playing ball or trail running, that's my go-to method is a transdermal electrical muscle stimulation plus ice. And I think everybody should have like just an easy, small, portable electrical muscle stimulation unit and an easy, small, portable pulse electromagnetic field, the PEMF unit. I think those are really, really good to own for kind of biohacking recovery.
What's it more quickly?
What's that?
What kind of cream?
Right? Oh, the CBD cream, magnesium cream, Tramiel cream. There's a lot of, tons of creams.
Anything analgesic or...
Yeah, any of those analgesic creams. Yeah, exactly. Arnica, anything like that. So the next one, I talked about the nap, you know, as I was talking about balanced energy. And man, figuring out a way to just slip into a parasympathetic state really quickly. I mean, my two naps now are... A, I'll do New Calm, the New Calm device, and that thing's amazing. It's the vagal nerve stimulation, it's the binaural beats, it's these tracks that just lull you into sleep over 20 minutes, simulates a full sleep cycle. And then the other one that I use is Brain FM. Those are my two top methods for getting myself into a relaxed state really, really quickly. And I figure if I'm gonna be laying there for 20 to 40 minutes, which is how long I nap, I own a few things that help that nap to become even more effective. Slipping on some Normatec recovery boots. That in and of itself lulls you to sleep, and it just milks all the blood out of those muscles and makes them feel light as a feather. Another one that I really like is a gravity blanket, like a good like 25-pound breathable gravity blanket. You feel safe, right? And safety is what kind of activates that parasympathetic state. A neck nest. There's a guy who made a back sleeping pillow that if you back sleep when you're sleeping, especially if you just want to do that quick 20-minute back sleeping nap, it keeps you from kind of like kind of waking up like that, doing a little piggy thing, which can kind of happen as you're dozing off. So those neck nests are amazing for that. And then the other one that I really like is the BioMap. The BioMap is infrared, and it has these crystals in it that release negative ions, very similar to your earthing or grounding. So I have some of those things. You know, if you want to build your own Zen den or your own kind of like quiet place to slip away to, these are some of the cool things that you can put into it. Okay, the chapter on symmetry and beauty in the book, I hope you're really gonna like that, because I go into everything from like workplace ergonomics to how to combine clay masks with infrared lights to different like chewing and nasal breathing type of exercises. But as far as some of the, probably the biggest win for symmetry in the face is nasal breathing. And I don't know if you've read Patrick McCown's book, Oxygen Advantage, but one thing I've really been focusing on, I appreciate the guy, I'm working with Joe DiStefano right now, my kettlebell training, and he always has me breathe through my nose. So he'll even have me put like a popsicle stick in my mouth to keep my mouth closed. I recently switched to a little device called an Opti-O2, which just keeps you from breathing through your mouth when you're working out. And when you train yourself, I think the best way to learn how to do nasal breathing, which is amazing for your facial structure, for oxygenating everything as it comes in, for decreasing activation of the baroreceptors in the chest, which cause that cortisol release. I think one of the best ways to learn how to do that is to learn how to nasal breathe while you're doing hard exercise. Yeah, during yoga, during anything, that nasal breathing is amazing for facial symmetry and facial structure. And if I could point out one other thing on here that I'm a huge fan of, that I do a lot of, and there's so many things to choose from, but one thing that's been a game changer for me, because I went to the dentist for my tooth cleaning. I hadn't been to the dentist in like 8 years, and they were like, oh, your gums are going to bleed, this is going to be horrible. You haven't had a tooth cleaning in 8 years. This was about, it was about 11 months ago, but I'd been doing the oil pulling for about a year and a half, the Ayurvedic practice of using extra virgin coconut oil, or just companies like the Dirt Now on Amazon that sell these amazing blends of different oils. And I squish it around my mouth for about 10 to 15 minutes when I get up, and I spit it in the trash can, not the sink or the toilet, because I figured out my wife gets pissed off when my nasty oils clog the pipes. So you use this stuff to clean your mouth, it cleans the gums, and it's just amazing. Amazing. It's a little bit of workout for your face when you get up. So oil pulling and nasal breathing are two good ways to jumpstart your way into facial symmetry. And then pay attention to the section of the book where I talk about little movement snacks like LDOA training, foundation training, self-myofascial stretching. I have a bunch of routines in the book, these little 3 to 5 minute snacks of movement that I'll give to folks to use on airplanes or to use at the office, but they're wonderful for symmetry, like the core coiling exercise and some of these inversion exercises. So those are a few of the things that I really focus on when it comes to kind of making sure that the symmetry in the face is good. The immune system chapter, I get into a lot of stuff on immunity. And of course, I already talked about some of these detoxification practices like trampolining and vibrating and whole body shaking, dry skin brushing, massage. All these things are wonderful for the immune system and for moving lymph fluid through the body. But some of the big, so if you were to open my medicine cabinet, I'll tell you the best things. First off, you start to get a cold, dissolving one of those life extension zinc acetate lozenges in your mouth, doing about 4 to 6 of those a day. It's amazing for decreasing the duration of an upper respiratory tract infection. Colostrum, I already talked about, but for healing up the gut lining and assisting with immunity, that one's fantastic. I'm always traveling now with oregano and propolis. I'm doing these events now, it seems like almost every day. I'm with a whole bunch of people, shaking hands with all you dirty, dirty, sick people, signing books. And it's like when I came in here, before I left the house, I did oil of oregano, really good for anti-parasitic, antifungal. When I got here, I did the bee propolis spray in the mouth. And it's just wonderful with all the travel that I do for airborne pathogens. I usually will drink a cup of chaga with my coffee. I don't double fist. I put the chaga into the coffee. And I'll have chaga in my coffee. And that's okay to do in a fasted state. Chaga doesn't have any calories. It's actually in some of the cocktails back here. Chaga is wonderful. Then the last one at our house, there's thieves. And we diffuse thieves and I travel with thieves. I'll use thieves topically on wounds and cuts. Thieves is another really good one. But those are my biggies. Like in my medicine cabinet, those are go-tos for the immune system, for getting the shields up, so to speak. Okay, what's that? My turmeric? I take turmeric, but it's the turmerosaccharides in the Keon Flex. I pop 3 of those at night, so I'm getting my turmeric. I am getting it, yes. Good question, because that's good for the immune system as well. So, eliminating non-native EMF. So non-native EMF, I'm gonna give you guys three tips, okay? A. Non-native EMF is going to cause an influx of calcium into your cells. So, because of that, one of the best things that you can do, they even did a study where they showed people with electrohypersensitivity actually had a reduction in electrohypersensitivity when they took a calcium channel blocker. You can also take magnesium, keep your magnesium levels topped off. Number two, the DNA damage that occurs in response to non-ionizing radiation requires NAD and sirtuins. NAD and sirtuins to repair that damage. Sirtuins you're going to find from a rainbow of foods. Fisetin's probably at the top that you find from wild strawberries, red wine, dark chocolate, blueberries, etc. And there are certain companies that sell little cocktails of sirt activators. When you combine those with NAD supplementation or NAD IVs, one of the best things you can do to battle non-native EMF. And then finally, the last pathway that takes a hit is called your NRF2 pathway. It modulates your inflammation. One of the best ways, aside from fasting, to activate that NRF2 pathway are ketone salts or ketone esters, and actually taking those when you're flying, when you're exposed to a lot of radiation, inflammation, non-native EMF, magnesium, NAD and sirtuins, and some form of ketone salt or ketone ester are three things that really help you in your battle against non-native EMF. When it comes to air, filtering the air that you breathe, when it comes to light, I think many of us are already aware of all the issues with light, but the biggest one for me is just the flicker from a lot of these LEDs. So I now use, you know, I use the raw optics, clear lens during the day, I use the orange when it comes to light. And that is that in the night, we know we should put red incandescent bulbs in the bedroom and wear like reddish orange lenses at night and simulate the sunset and red light as much as possible during the night. But what happens in the morning? Sunrise, right? It's reddish orange in the morning. So now when I'm wearing those blue light blocker glasses at night, I take them off, I put them on the bedside. I wake up in the morning, I put them back on. And I wear those for the first hour of the morning because my body's gradually waking up and I'm getting almost like that sunrise effect when I'm looking at screens and reading my morning emails. So I use the glasses most people think you're supposed to use at night only. Use them in the morning to simulate sunrise. And I figured that out. I don't know why I didn't think of that, but I started doing it about 2 months ago. And it really helps with wakefulness in the morning, slower bleed of that cortisol response. It's a good way to wake up. Okay, hormones. Hormones. A couple things about hormones. I released a big podcast on testosterone and hormones today. I talk about hormones and sex and libido a lot in the book, and most of us know the biggies, but I would say in both men and women, for both fertility and hormones, the biggest nutrients, whether or not you're going to use bioidentical hormone replacement therapy or testosterone, anything like that, the biggest nutrients to supplement with before you go to a doctor and get on some anti-aging hormone or peptide therapy, very simple, creatine, magnesium, boron, zinc, DHEA, and vitamin D. If I'm working with somebody who has low testosterone, before I talk to them at all about working with some functional medicine doc on an anti-aging protocol, I first look at those. Make sure those are in the supplements that they're taking. Make sure the levels are topped off. That's one of the most important things both males and females can do for testosterone, progesterone, DHEA is to look at those compounds: creatine, magnesium, boron, zinc, DHEA, and vitamin D. Vitamin D. Right. A lot of other things you can do. Okay, I'll address that one last little thing on that. Nitroglycerin cream. I use that for sex. It's amazing. It's amazing. If you can get nitroglycerin cream, you can use it to make dynamite, but you can also use it. She can use it too. And for instant blood flow. I mean, like, it's insti within 2 minutes, freaking Viagra. Stuff's amazing. You just smear it on and you're off to the races. So look at a nitroglycerin cream if you want to have a good time. That and that, and intranasal ketamine and oxytocin, you're having an amazing day, right? operate within the bounds of legality, please. So, having a purpose. I talked about having a purpose. Having a purpose. Think back to what you liked to do when you were a kid. Think back to what makes time go by super fast right now. What puts you in the zone. That'll give you clues about what it is that really lights you up. What it is that you're passionate about. Do things that, as author Mark Manson said, make you forget to eat and poop. Right? These are the things that when we're doing, like when I write, like my wife will look at a blank page and she'll look at it for hours and the tears will start to stream down her face. She hates writing. For me, I'll sit down to write at like 4 p.m. and my kids will like come to the office at 7:30 p.m. and be like, dinner time down. I'm like, what do you mean? I just started writing like 20 minutes ago. Like for me, writing is just like, it just happens. It just flows. But that's because that's a skill that I was born with. It's part of my passion. I love to teach. I love to write. I love to read and research. And time just flies by when I'm doing this. Time also flies by when I'm speaking. I'm sorry. I realize I'm late. But I'm almost done. I'm almost done. I promise. And then once you've identified your passion, you can say in one single, clear, succinct sentence what your passion is. I, Ben Greenfield, want to empower people to live a more adventurous, joyful, and fulfilling life. I want to live... to empower people to live a more adventurous, joyful, and fulfilling life. You should be able to say your passion purpose in one succinct sentence so that when all the bullets are flying at you from the matrix of the email inbox of your computer, you know you have a why, you know you have a purpose, you know you have a reason for getting up in the morning. And I think that that's something a lot of people neglect is, why am I doing this? Why am I doing what I'm doing? What's the ultimate purpose? But once you identify your purpose in life, then all you need to do with that purpose is follow the golden rule, which is what? Love your neighbor as yourself. Or as I just like to say, love people. Figure out what your passion is. Figure out what your purpose is. Then go out and love people with it. Right? That, it's just such a magical, amazing way to live life. And I wish more people would just do what they love to do and what they're good at, and then figure out how to help other people with that. Figure out how to love people with your passion and your purpose in life. And we see this over and over and over again in the Blue Zones. And then finally, be grateful. Be grateful. Gratefulness, man, it's just, I wake up every single day and I'm so grateful. And I write down every little thing that I'm grateful for. That breath of air. Oh, thank you. Another breath of air. Oh, thank you. And these tiny, tiny things. We go around as a family in the morning. We do it again at night. What are you grateful for today? What happened today you're grateful for? Who were you grateful for? What was that moment you experienced that you're grateful for? What was that food you tasted that you're grateful for? The tiniest of pleasures you can be grateful for. All these attachments that we have. All these attachments that we have to our biohacks and to our special diet and to our favorite pair of clothes and to our car and to our job. They're just attachments to silly things. If you can let those go and just be grateful for the moment, grateful for every single moment that occurs, be mindful of that moment. Quit thinking about where you're going to go after this, what you're going to do tomorrow morning. Be grateful for the right here and right now. You can close your eyes if you want. Go ahead, try it. Just think of something that you're grateful for that happened to you today. Be grateful for. I loved it when I walked out of my little condo this morning. The sun hit my face. Just like, boom. Oh my gosh, sunlight. It's there every day. Isn't that cool? All those photons of sun. It's right there. Even though it's cloudy, it's right there, shining through, giving me light, feeding the plants, feeding my body. Not burning up our whole planet like some giant ball of fire. That's magical. Grateful. Be grateful for it. Once you think of something, become aware of your heart. Become aware of your heart center.
Just take that moment of gratefulness and breathe it in. Right there into your heart center. Just feel that gratefulness wash over your body. Feels so good. Do that. Do that tomorrow a few times. Just stop. See those breathwork habits you learned about, but combine them with feeling grateful. And write down one thing you're grateful for at night or in the morning. Breathe it into your heart. You smile to yourself and you're grateful. It's amazing. It's amazing to be alive. Open your eyes. Isn't it amazing to be alive, you guys? Like, we live in this amazing time to play with all these cool things, and we get to go eat good food and walk around the city and meet cool people. Every single person in here, every single unique spirit and soul, everybody in here is just like an angel. Every single one of you. You have this spark inside you. Keep that thing fueled. Feed your soul. Feed your spirit. Be grateful. Have a purpose. And then go out and play with all these other amazing scientific things, the wonders of the world that we're surrounded with, that allow us to be way healthier and have more boundless energy than human beings have ever been blessed to be able to have. Take that stuff and learn with it. Have an amazing time with it. Have an amazing night tonight, you guys.
No, actually, that's number three. We're going to... Yeah. Oh, you want to dive right into that?
Dr. John Laurent in Sarasota, dude. He just started that suppository company. I started traveling with them. I take a melatonin and a CBD suppository before I go to bed now when I travel. Oh my gosh! Like my readiness score this morning was 95, and my sleep scores right now are in the 90s. I think I have high tolerance because I gave him to a doctor last week. I dosed him up after we went to dinner. We were supposed to go to the gym at 7. He was still in bed at 8:30. So proceed with caution. But yeah, melatonin CBD suppositories. I forget his website. It's Dr. John Laurent. Oh my gosh.
Okay, so real quick, for people who don't put things up their butt, or like have never tried to put a suppository up, like a supplement.
Right? What I
do up there and all that.
Well, bypasses the stomach acids and gastric absorption. So, I mean, that's why a lot of doctors will rectally administer or transdermally administer drugs. And that's really the primary reason is better absorption and the slow bleed that you get, not bleed blood, but like the slow release of the nutrients into your system through those blood vessels in the rectum. And then the other thing that's in each of the little suppositories is probiotics. He puts probiotics in there. It's actually replacing the colonic flora while you're asleep. Isn't that cool?
What's the name of it again?
John Laurent. I had him in a roundup like 2 weeks ago in the weekly roundup on my website. I put him in there. I put a discount code for him on there as well. But it's called his Travel Hacker Kit. And it comes with a glutathione spray too for the nose for immunity. And what I do is I just put them like an inch up, then you do a handstand against the wall for like 2 minutes, then go to bed.
Cool.
Bravo awesome. Does that too. Bravo yogurt does that as well.
Bravo yogurt, yeah. Cool.
By the way, we're gonna take questions from all of you, and we have a mic probably on this side. Carlin, I'm gonna give you this mic, and hopefully you can just pass it out.
There's a couple of mics if you need to.
There are a couple of mics. Maybe someone else could.
Anybody else want to be a mic?
That one term, okay, yes, can you handle that other mic? Okay, so please keep your questions short and sweet. No long-winded soliloquies and all that. So, because we don't have a lot of time.
Yeah, so that I know how long are we doing Q&A, then we'll we all know how.
20 minutes.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
At most. Okay, so burning question right there, gentlemen up front.
My name is Red. My name is Red, and I want to thank you for the presentation. My question is pretty quick. You shared a lot of information. How do you advise approaching prioritizing the experimentation process?
Start with the mitochondria. Start by treating your body as a human battery. I talked about that electrochemical gradient and the negative ions and the top things to start with for treating your body as a battery would be exposure to photons of light. Are they using any of those light biohacks like infrared, near infrared, red light, a red light panel, or frequent doses of daily sunlight? That's number one. There's this really great book I'm reading right now called The Human Photosynthesis, about how melanin interacts with photons of light to spill off electrons. So it's almost like free energy. Number two would be grounding and earthing, mats or PMF or a biomat, or going outside barefoot, or just getting those cheap ass straps on Amazon that you strap around any pair of shoes, that'll ground any pair of shoes, or getting earth runners. So grounding and earthing would be number two. Number three and four would be heat and cold, both of which are fantastic at shuttling electrons through the body, have a host of other benefits. So a regular sauna practice or a regular cryo or cold thermogenesis practice, and then good, clean, pure, either reverse osmosis or carbon block filtration that you're then adding a really good mineral solution to, like keton hypertonic minerals or Celtic salt. Celtic salt is amazing. It's low in microplastics, it's low in iron, it's low in metals, very high in minerals. You can sprinkle that into water when you're traveling. More expensive, but better solution would be the keton hypertonic solution. But if you start with light, earthing and grounding, heat, cold, water, and minerals, if you've already got good wholesome nutrition and a solid movement practice, like that's gonna cover like 80% of your bases.
All right, thank you. Question over here on the right.
Thank you for coming here, and I'm following you for 4 years now.
So, wow.
Yes, I learned a lot, thank you. What do you think of M&M? And I know you...
He's the real Slim Shady.
You think David Sinclair Shady?
Did you say M&M?
M&M, like the rapper?
Or do you mean N&M?
M&M.
Oh.
I know you interviewed Mark. And what do you think of the Art Crystal?
I missed the second part of that question. Before you said Art Crystal, what'd you say?
You interviewed Mark.
Oh yeah. I'm probably gonna like get, a lot of times I'll just like buy this stuff and try it out. I haven't used the Art Crystal yet, so no comment. You know, some of these frequency generating devices have no research behind them, but if I use them and like my HRV goes up and my sleep gets better, then it's doing something. The NMN is a wonderful way to maintain high levels of NAD, particularly in the hypothalamus, even more than nicotinamide riboside. If you're looking for the brain effect, you either need intranasal NAD or sublingual NMN. So if I had to take oral nicotinamide riboside or sublingual NMN, I at this point would do sublingual NMN. And I'm a huge fan of, you know, getting an NAD IV, you know, once a month or once every couple of months, you know, get a good slow 1,000 milligram drip, and then keep your levels elevated with sublingual NMN or oral NR. And then when I travel, I order from San Diego from the NAD clinic down there, transdermal NAD patches, because what I was saying about non-native EMF. So I get this slow bleed of NAD into my body while I'm on the airplane. So that's really good for like long haul flights, because they'll bleed in over like 8 hours.
Yeah. Right. We have a question up here, Sage.
I think so. What would you do to regenerate a pancreas that vasoactive intestinal peptide destroyed?
I have no clue.
I mean, I know we've seen some pancreatic cell regeneration from strict adherence, like a ketogenic approach. I think Virta Health has done a little bit of looking at that. But yeah, that's probably something to ask your doctor about.
If the doctor did it to you?
Find a different doctor.
I would look, so in terms of like medical practitioner directories, like I'm increasingly sending people to Wild Health MD during the US, because I dig those guys and they got good training programs. If you go, there's one page of the book that lists every single doctor I work with and every single medical practitioner network that I go to when I need to find a doctor for somebody. So if you own the book, you're getting the book, find that section, and I would hook up with one of those knocks, because I will vouch for them.
Awesome. Great resource. All right, we have a question over here. Avisha.
So this question is actually from a live stream from Frank Losa from Ketone Aid.
Nice.
I'm from Ketone Aid. Yeah. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Frank.
Awesome.
Thanks for sending me that tasty jet fuel.
Yeah, I tried it today, actually.
Have you tried the D13-butanediol, the ketone alcohol, rather than just the esters and salts?
Nope.
Or do you know anything about them?
Unless that's in his new formula, which I did try. I haven't tried it.
It comes
in his new stuff. I tried it.
it's like the new stuff, the bottle that's not labeled at all, and it's not actually on the market yet, so I don't know if that, he sent that one too.
Frank, you bastard, why didn't you send me to try?
Gives you a little buzz.
Yeah.
Wait, so do you use ketone esters for your training? And
I used to use them a lot when I was racing. Okay. Yeah. So I would actually jack up my blood glucose and my ketones simultaneously, completely non-natural state for the human body to be in. But man, if you want to just rock it, if you're going to run a marathon or something, it's amazing. So you take both high carbs and ketones simultaneously. So you're in ketosis and hyperglycemia. You're like Superman.
What if you're not trained? Could you take it? I guess we could ask Frank that when he's probably he'll answer that better. But like, what if you want to fast? Can you take it while you're fasting to enhance your fasting?
Ketone esters upregulate autophagy during calorie restriction. Mm-hmm. So even though there are a mild amount of calories in them, the pros that you'll get from ketone supplementation during fasting within a reason is actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. So yeah, cool. Beta hydroxybutyrate salts to a certain extent, the ketone esters even more mimic calorie restriction and induce autophagy. So if you are fasting, especially for a long fast, like a 3-5 day fast, I think it's pretty good to have those in your back pocket, unless you're fasting for spiritual reasons, for self-denial, for really, you know, not eating anything as a form of training your spirit or training your mind. I think that ketone esters will make a fast more beneficial.
Good to know, because I'm planning on going into my first 3 day soon. I've never done 3 day. So do you think it's going to make it easier? Because I just was talking John. He did a 5 day just about a week ago. Dave Hippensteel's son, John Hippensteel, and he said that he it was like he wasn't happy. Like he was kind of... John, are you there? He's all the way in the back of the... Yeah, he was saying that he just felt really run down, or he was just depressed from that. Well, what would you recommend for someone who's doing a long extended fast and wants to maintain their optimal level and also not to lose strength? That's...
And you're sad?
John, were you sad?
It was just more difficult. I did a 5 day about 15 months ago.
When I'm sad, I get high and go to the oatmeal.com and read comments. That's how I do it.
No, it was just a bit more difficult than I remember the first one I did. And I'm not, I mean, obviously it's going to be difficult, but
yeah. Okay.
My energy has started to come back this week, the last few days, more so than before the fast. Which was a reason I
would say just make sure you go into a fast with good micronutrient status and good neurotransmitter precursors. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, your brain needs fuel, and particularly for dopamine and serotonin and some of those feel-good chemicals. If you got low B12 status, or you know, like I was talking about in my talk, low amino acid status going into a fast, you might just have a little less neurotransmitter levels to play around with. You could also try some of those other things I talked about, like 5-HTP, SAMe, vitamin C, some of the things that would support neurotransmitters when you go into your fast. You kind of load up.
Yep.
That's really important. So we should all get blood work done before we actually
You get like a NutriVal, for example. That'd be the best one to get, because then you're getting all your micronutrients.
Question I want to definitely get to you, but there's a question over there. Neil. Wait, one sec. We're going to get you a mic.
Hi, Ben. Great presentation. You mentioned a couple of times about doing the hyperbaric. You're doing the soft shell, you're mentioning, like the oxygen?
Yeah, like the lower PSI soft shell.
I know there's studies that say it may not be as good for things like if you have an injury or something like that, but you find just for general detox and recovery, it's okay enough as opposed to the hard shell ones?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I was talking with John from Cryo. Are you here, John?
Yeah, I think he's on the right side over there.
I was talking with him earlier today, and like the high pressure ones are better. You're gonna get more oxygen, more pressure. They're more expensive. They're less portable for a home, and also like I take my phone and play New Calm and like Beats and stuff. And technically, with the higher pressure ones, anything in there can spontaneously combust.
Sure.
Kind of like that movie. What's the movie with Ryan Reynolds, the superhero? Deadpool. Yeah, kind of like that. You don't want a Deadpool scenario in your hyperbaric chamber. So, and even books, apparently, like you have books and something throws off a spark. So I'm pretty comfortable in the soft shell. But yeah, if you want to pull out all the stops, the bigger hard shells, you can get a lot more out of it. But I just have one of the HBOT USA, whatever their, I think it's one of their top models. And it'll go up to like 1.4, which is, it's pretty good. I feel pretty good in that thing.
Great, thank you.
All right. We have a few more minutes. Okay, question on the right side.
Carl. Thanks for the talk, Ben. You talked a lot about inflammation all over the body, specifically the brain and blood vessels. How do you go about quantifying inflammation? Would you use anything like medical imaging, like an MRI or something?
No, you do blood measurements. CRP, cytokines, fibrinogen, homocysteine, just the basic inflammatory blood panel. I think some companies package inflammation panels. I think Wellness FX has one. I think Inside Tracker also has one. But you can, Genova Diagnostics surely does. And you can just get just your inflammatory markers measured if you don't want to pay for everything else and you just want to look at inflammation.
You think an image would be cool for anything, just kind of baseline or see anything in that?
I mean, I did like a full body MRI and it was interesting. It was like peace of mind seeing that, you know, I didn't have tumors and there were some interesting things in terms of seeing some soft tissue issues that I wasn't aware of and pockets of fluid that could indicate like soft tissue inflammation. But I mean, it's also kind of expensive and you know, I don't know. It's decent to do once for peace of mind, but if you're trying to regularly track inflammation, I would just do blood inflammatory markers.
Okay. Thanks.
Cool. Awesome. We have a question all the way back in the back there, and then I'm going to take you, Christian, right? Okay. And then I think you're going to be the last question. All right. Then we're going to get on with the book signing.
I'll sign books after for you guys for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Hi Ben.
Devalue them all.
This is Xi Wen. So I used to do a weekly fast of just doing 36 hours of water fasting, but recently I looked into protein fasting. So I was just wondering, do you think protein fasting is a sustainable alternative to water fasting? Like perhaps like it can trigger autophagy? Sorry if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
For sure. Yeah, you're going to switch off mTOR. Once you don't have high levels of leucine or methionine, you'll switch off mTOR. So, I mean, you still are going to have some amount of blood glucose fluctuation, et cetera, if you're consuming calories. But that's like I was talking about earlier, right? Like the Mediterranean diet, periods of time during the year where, you know, like my dad, he's part of the Eastern Orthodox Church. So, like, at Thanksgiving, he'll just be like, yeah, I'm not eating meat. It's some weird number of weeks, but it's pretty much like he's not eating meat until Christmas, right? So his body's in autophagy for a good like month and a half there. So,
do you think it's like a good routine that you could possibly do like once a week or maybe even like three times a week? Because I've, Dave Asprey, he mentions it just as like, he didn't mention how frequently you could do it. He just mentions that it's important to do less than 15 grams of protein when you do it.
Yeah,
but there's another author, Naomi Witto. She says that she suggests doing it three times a week, but doing like 25 grams of protein. So, do you think like doing it like once or three times a week?
That depends on your level of physical activity. If there's like multiple days during the week where you're not training, those are days that you could actually benefit from some amount of protein restriction. So if you're doing like 0.8 grams per pound on a training day, which would be reasonable. Maybe you're going down to 0.5 to 0.55 grams per pound on a non-training day, which still helps to maintain nitrogen balance, but is a much lower protein bolus. So yeah, absolutely. You could be cognizant of your protein needs based on training and choose lower protein doses. You know, and you know, you don't have to do a ribeye steak every day, right?
Last point on that would be, is there any like cautions or tips regarding like getting in your nutrients during protein fast? Because I did a protein fast just yesterday, and looking in my nutrient intake for yesterday, it looked like it was hard to get in a lot of nutrients.
Yeah, maybe like feeding a chronometer or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just use a multivitamin or a nutrient complex. And who was like the obese guy who fasted for 300? Some ridiculous number of days, and he didn't suffer from that many micronutrient deficiencies, but he was using a multivitamin.
Is there any brand of multivitamin that you recommend?
There's a few good brands, Thorne, Standard Process, Life Extension, some of the brands that just are particularly well known for being good, but I usually choose Thorne.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and they're highly rated on Labdoor. And
Thorne.
Go to Labdoor.com. Thorne
does a good job.
Yep. Okay, last question, Christian. Can we get the mic up here? Christian. Thank you, Tim.
Hi, thanks, Ben. There's a lot of excitement about light therapy right now, but there's not a lot of clarity on ideal red light and infrared light therapy treatment lengths. Mm. Do you recommend different treatment lengths for people with different skin types? And do you recommend light therapy before or after workouts?
Most of the studies are 10 to 20 minutes for a good higher power device. The lower power, less expensive devices sometimes require like a 45, 50, 60 minute treatment time. But like Juve, for example, that's 10 to 20 minutes. More than that, you can create excess reactive oxygen species. So you don't want to overdo it. Another supplement I talk about there, a methylene blue. Same thing, you take too much methylene blue, you overactivate reactive oxygen species or overgenerate them. So I think 10 to 20 minutes is the sweet spot. Because of the nitric oxide release, I think post-workout is better than pre-workout just because you get better blood flow pre-workout. I do 10 to 20 minutes every day in the morning, and it just kind of like lights me up for the rest of the day. So that's the way that I do it. But yeah, 10 to 20 minutes generally for a good device is what you're looking at.
All right, we're gonna end this here. There's so much more that you can learn in the book. So thank you so much for coming out. We are so honored.
Well, thanks for listening to today's show. You can grab all the show notes, the resources, pretty much everything that I mentioned over at bengreenfieldfitness.com, along with plenty of other goodies from me, including the highly helpful Ben Recommends page, which is a list of pretty much everything that I've ever recommended for hormones, sleep, digestion, fat loss, performance, and plenty more. Please also know that all the links, all the promo codes that I mentioned during this and every episode help to make this podcast happen and to generate income that enables me to keep bringing you this content every single week. So when you listen in, be sure to use the links in the show notes, use the promo codes that I generate, because that helps to float this thing and keep it coming to you each and every week.